Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, otherwise known as the proposed Liberty State. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but being in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Amen. And it's good to have those messages here on American Christian Network. And I want to take a few moments and talk a little bit about family. Now, I ended the last show talking about the death of the very beloved Bible teacher, Chuck Missler, a great man. And so, everybody, you know, go home and spend some time with your family. Pray with your family. Don't, you know, try to pray with individual family members. Pray with the whole family together. And cherish the time because life is short. Well, the next day, I got some pretty sad news in that one of my friends, a guy that I went to college with, ended up being a lieutenant colonel in the Judge Advocate General Corps in the Army, deployed overseas, came back. Well, he was tragically killed in Arlington, Virginia, in a terrible, terrible accident. And it was the next day. And so this, I want to take a moment so that we can talk about reiterating that this is not something just to kind of, oh, well, that sounds nice on the radio. But we actually need to take time with our families. And we need to push back. We need to push back against those that would try to impose their schedules on us to interfere with our time with our families. We need to take the time to really develop the relationship with our family. And you know what? You'll never regret it. You're not going to regret spending time with your family, no matter what all of the different things are that are going on around you. No matter all of the different things that are happening. You are not going to regret spending time with your family. It's just not going to happen. And I think, too, for us as Christians, it's not just about, you know, spreading freedom to the next generation. It is about inculcating Christian values, having honest conversations about the things that are happening in the world, things that are happening internal to the family. And it used to be that the American dinner table was the source of American strength, and I believe that's true. But that means, you know, the video games need to be turned off, the television needs to be turned off, you need to sit down and actually have a dinner and a conversation. You need to make time to do that. Oh, everybody's too... No, it's that important. It's that essential to continuing a free nation. And that brings me now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front from the Middle East. Israel prepares for war with Iran. Some stern words coming out from the Trump administration in regards to the Iran deal. Deb Kefile having an article that says, quote, U.S. sources, Israel prepares for war with Iran. Now, you also have an interesting thing where Tehran now has been struck twice in the last month. Tehran has been struck in an intelligence capacity in their country with this huge coup of getting their atomic archives. But they've also been struck in Syria by Israel. And the Israelis targeted the ability of the Iranians to strike from within Syria, especially with their missile capability, and did really a devastating series of attacks. So it's only, I believe, a matter of time before this really does become a flashpoint. Now, many people have said, well, hey, we kind of thought this is going to happen. Well, yeah, and a lot of people thought it was going to be the United States. That's not really the way things are aligning over there. And another interesting note, I saw another article today in regards to Turkey aligning with more and more Iran. And the reason that Turkey has been aligning with Iran is over the common thing they share, and it's weird to say that because one is predominantly Sunni, one is predominantly Shia, and that common problem is the Kurdish regions of both those countries, and for that matter, northern Syria and northern Iraq. So the Kurdish regions, if they unite, because now the Kurds hold vast swaths of territory, obviously pose a problem for those two countries. So they're finding alignment. Turkey and Iran are now on that issue, which is odd. In that normally they have been aligned with NATO, but I will tell you that the idea that Turkey is trying to advocate for the punishment of criticism of Islam in the European Union should tell you that they are really no longer the secular country that they used to be. And Erdogan is certainly not inclined to turn it back towards secularism. I don't think anybody argues that. Also on the international front, China, really behind the scenes, these Korean peace talks. Now, some people are saying, oh, this is a ruse by Kim Jong-un, and we're going to find out. We certainly are going to find out. The thing to look for in all this is tangible agreed to concessions. So not just promises. And that's what's got me a little nervous right now. You know, we can't just accept promises of denuclearization. There has to be a tangible, verifiable, agreed to term in regards to that. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds, but promises, just, hey, trust us. You really can't trust the most repressive prison regime in the world, arguably, if not in fact, that they're just going to do the right thing. And either way, it's good to see diplomacy being used first and not us rushing into war or doing something like that. And again, there should be a constitutional approach to the issue of intervention overseas, because intervention in and of itself is not the justification to go to war. So it's good to see that we're taking a diplomatic approach in that regard and heading and going back to the Iran issue. The White House saying that the Iran deal was made under false pretenses and sending some pretty strong signals that it looks like Trump is probably going to abandon the Iran deal, which I do not disagree with. But again, I just hope that he does not let advisors try to talk him into going to war in an unconstitutional fashion. I just hope that he's guarding himself against that. All right, also on the international front, Venezuela, starvation and suicides up. Another cautionary tale of how socialism ends with massive hyperinflation. There's a book called When Money Dies, and if you get a chance, you should take a look at it, because this is what's happening. Hyperinflation, suicides, starvation, and hyperinflation. This is true hyperinflation, over 8,000% in the last year in Venezuela, right? And people are still trying to defend. Some of these downtown Seattle people are pretty funny to me. They're still trying to defend the idea that socialism works well even in the modern age. It's so, they just didn't, those guys down in Venezuela, they just didn't do it right. You know, there's a better way to do it. They just didn't do it right. Well, The New American having an article on that, and you should go check it out. A lot of good facts in there, but 8,000%. That's just amazing to me. Unbelievable. All right. Next. This on the national front. Barna coming out with a new poll showing that American morality, by the objective standards that he uses, sliding away, that we're really redefining morality and by so doing increasing single parent families, which most people agree is not the right direction, because there are so many things when you don't have a two parent family that you have to face. And it's not to say people can't make it out of that. It's not to say people aren't doing well out of that. But overall, the statistics are undeniable, particularly where there's the absence of a father. And that brings us to Iowa. In Iowa, the Iowa legislature has passed a bill banning abortion after a heartbeat is detected. And that is now on the desk of Governor Kim Reynolds. Now, here is my thought on this. Any time that you provide an arbitrary place along the line from conception to natural death, when a life is worth something or not, whether that's based on circumstances or the fact that somebody travels 6 inches across the birth canal, what you're really doing is saying that a man or a group of men or women can choose when to terminate a life. And if that's the case, then justification and rationalization creeps in, and you end up going down the path of eugenics. And I could say that unequivocally because I offered amendments on the House floor to ban abortion based solely on the baby's gender. And the Democrats rejected it. I offered amendments, along with a colleague of mine, that we put these together, to ban abortion when it is based solely on the fact that a baby has Down syndrome. And they rejected it. That, my friends, is the definition of eugenics, where you are killing people based on those innate factors they are born with. I mean, logically, that's horrifying. So it's good to see that Iowa is taking this approach. And, you know, for those that are listening that are libertarian leaning, you know, the idea of non-oppression, non-aggression, I mean, the most oppressive, aggressive thing you could do is to tear a baby womb, you know, from the womb, limb from limb. You know, it's just horrible. So Iowa doing a great thing. Also on the national front, and this coming from the New American as well, the Boy Scouts have waved the white flag of surrender to political correctness. They're going to remove the word boy from their name. Now, 8 years ago, I talked about this. Okay. About the day that would come if we continued down the path we're going, where the Boy Scouts would be completely decimated by political correctness. And apparently that day is today. They are removing the word boy from their name, Scouts. Despite the fact that in 99.99% of the cases, the gender of an individual, of a human being, can be determined by the presence or absence of a Y chromosome. Period. End of story. That's science and biology. Done. Also on the national front, students in over 400 schools walked out of class to support the Second Amendment yesterday, including led by Aubrey Bosworth down near Yakima. And it was interesting that the schools were resisting the walkout, that they let the walkout on an anti-gun. There was free speech that way. But no, if you're pro-gun, no, we're gonna make it as hard for you as possible. And thank goodness there were some great law enforcement officers down there in Yakima and other places throughout the country who said, hey, we're not going to stop you. Also on the national front, defensive gun use, 3 to 5 times more, 3 to 5 times more than those guns are used to commit crimes. Conclusive proof, I mean, by the way, just conclusive proof that guns actually save lives. Oh, but if we had no guns, Matt, at all, ever, anywhere, everyone would live in peace and harmony. Yeah, well, unless you take into account the fact that human nature hasn't changed in 6,000 years. And the fact is, there are evil people out there. That's it. There are evil people out there. And the only way to stop evil people with guns is good people with guns. That's just the reality of it. You can try to rationalize it away. You can try to ignore it. But reality and facts have a great way of smacking you upside the head. Also on the national front, there's an issue that I've got to get confirmation on this, okay? I've got to get confirmation on this. But there is allegedly a county in Colorado that may be considering banning preparedness, essentially. So I'm going to get more information on that. But this was kind of a policy that, in some ways, indirectly, the Obama administration pursued, that, you know, stockpiling food, having extra generators, those kind of things, fuel, that might not be a good thing. In particular, they went after the stockpiling of ammunition. And I'm going to keep an eye on this because I think that the gun grabbers are really going to make a push on not only ammunition, they're going to make a push on magazines. And you're going to watch, you know, it's not going to be just this thing that's happening in Washington with the idea of registering magazines. But you're going to see them try to push on numbers of actual bullets you can possess. So hopefully I have that confirmed and some more facts on Thursday. But the bottom line is, we need to be thinking about this stuff now because that is where they're going to be heading with this. All right, moving on to the regional front. RCW 4337, the RCW that I was told for years did not exist, exists, and it's in regards to weather modification. We got the first batch of records today back from the Department of Ecology. I've got to sift through them. But weather modification real? We haven't had a statute on the books since 1973, so we're going to find out what permits have been issued, when they've used it, etc. And we'll see what is provided, and I'll let you know hopefully on Thursday of next week. Also on the regional front, Seattle coming up with another, I don't know. Is ridiculous too strong a word? Probably not. But an employment tax. In other words, they're going to tax based on the number of employees per employee. Well, as a result of that, apparently Amazon has suspended construction. You know, these are the liberal companies too. It's so funny to me. And so then when it hits their pocketbook, they say, okay. Right. Well, Seattle is trying to do this. I mean, going against everything that really makes sense in the world of economics. So, I just, yikes. I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, you know, and people wonder why we want to split from downtown Seattle. It's ideas like that. I mean, even Amazon wants to split from. Yeah, it's so funny. You know, and it's, I heard from somebody the other day too, that was talking about, you know, they were kind of a moderate Democrat, and now they're seen as right wing in downtown Seattle. So, unbelievable. All right. Also on the regional front, California banning Bibles. It certainly looks that way. WorldNet Daily having the article. The bill would, and this is really critical to understand, would be under the Consumer Protection Act. And it would make it unlawful for any person to sell books that direct people to trust in Jesus Christ. So that means the Bible, right? I mean, that you have to read it that way, and legally you have to read it that way, and somebody would be given the ability to sue under the Consumer Protection Act in California to essentially ban the Bible or fine into non-existence anybody that was selling them. Real stuff, folks. And on the heels of that, we're going to talk, I don't talk that often on this show, about The Stranger, one of the most vile, horrific publications in the state of Washington. Out of where? Downtown Seattle, of course. And they have written an article that is just so full of inaccuracy. It essentially is talking about the fact that the 51st State Movement is a secessionist movement, even though the legal meaning for secession is to secede from the Union, to remove a state from the Union. And that's not what's being argued here. What's being argued is splitting the state according to Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution, which is what the Founding Fathers allowed and actually what they envisioned happened if the country got too big and states got too populous. But these guys, oh, no, of course. Okay. These guys say that, of course, there has to be a nefarious motive behind this. There has to be there has to be some hidden agenda, right? So I'm going to read a quote from The Stranger. And this is exactly why we need to split the state. I mean, they made my case for me. In fact, I'm probably going to use the quote. Okay. I'm going to probably use the quote in future presentations, okay? Because it's just so, these guys are so ridiculous. Here's what they said, okay? They're seeking to be, quote, liberated from a world where King County pays for most of their and blank, end quote. So again, the welfare freeloader argument that all of us in Eastern Washington are welfare freeloaders. Then they try to say that quotes were made up from a bill that I introduced in Olympia. Now, that's not true. The quotes were copied wrong. And that was immediately corrected. So they lied about that. But they also say that this is, quote, a trick for over 100 years, and they haven't been able to do so, split the state. But they keep trying because that's the definition of insanity, end quote. So again, a bunch of welfare freeloaders who are insane, right? That's how the folks in downtown Seattle view us. And they're introducing an employment tax to drive all their businesses out of downtown Seattle, including the liberal Amazon. Who's insane out there? Who is insane? These people don't even understand what freedom is anymore. So I call that in because it's important to understand these people really hate you. If you live in Eastern Washington, you believe in the right to bear arms, you believe in the right to life and liberty and property and the ability to defend all of that. They really hate you. I mean, they really think you're a bunch of welfare freeloading. Folks. And then the Seattle Times tried to pick up on this. And here's the interesting part. Here's the interesting part. They tried, literally, to compare us, okay, to Nazis. Even though they realize that the word National Socialist is really what that stands for. Not freedom-loving people who love the rule of law. Here's the other thing they said. Quote, they tried to quote me, once declared Shay that there are some very eerie similarities between using pastors to pacify people now as happened in Nazi Germany. End quote. I took that directly from the OSS report. Okay, the Office of Strategic Services report. And yet, they won't recognize that. Because I always put primary source documents behind those things. So it's really interesting. The 51st state has finally scared them enough. Finally scared them enough. That they are having to attack. That means, folks, we are coming very close. And I take that as a very, very positive sign that they are losing control and we're winning. And that brings me now to the local front. The Red Pill Expo coming up June 21st through 23rd in Spokane. A lot of great speakers going to be there. Again, if you use the code Shay, you can get a discount on your tickets. Also on the local front, Douglas County Lincoln Day, May 12th, Wenatchee Convention Center. I'm going to be talking about the 51st state, and this is the event that actually is the catalyst for all these articles now. When I go to Wenatchee, apparently I'm too close to Seattle for comfort, and so they want to rip on us. Also on the local front, my Freedom Rally fundraiser coming up next Tuesday, May 8th at Trezzi Farm Winery up in Green Bluff. Look forward to seeing all of you there. You can go on Eventbrite and buy the tickets. Also post it up on Facebook. And then lastly on the local front, this Saturday, Freedom Project regarding education and the crisis in education, put on by Dr. Duke Pesta, 3 o'clock on Saturday, May 5th at Center Place in Spokane Valley. And look forward to seeing you all there as well. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for the show. And thank you also for all of you that have been supporting us. And if you want to keep us on the air, you can always go to VoteShea.com. Well, finally, we've been trying to get this arranged for a little while. I'm proud to introduce my guest, David Belenius. We're going to talk today about the Avista Hydro One sale, something that a lot of you in the community have been asking about, we've been talking about. And David, I really appreciate you being here on Patriot Radio and having a candid conversation about what the implications of this sale might be.
Yes, thank you, Matt. I'm glad to be here.
Well, if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about your background. How did you get involved in all this?
Actually, my background started because I have an advanced degree in both business and geology, worked in geology more than 40 years. My thesis, in fact, has to do with carbon dioxide in some respects. And so when I first heard of this action that's going on between Avista and Hydro One, and then they published their so-called climate change action plan, I immediately saw a great red flag, and that they believe that there's climate change when all our geologic evidence shows it is completely impossible. And so I have been investigating this since the August time that I first recognized this. And I've given about three town halls, published three reports. So there's a fourth one in press. Several other folks in Idaho have written about it. And so we need to get the word out. People need to write to the commissioners in Olympia. They have until the end of May to do this, because that's when the public remarks or comments ends.
So let's talk a little bit about this. So there are a couple of things that are out there right now. First of all, Hydro One is owned, 49% of it anyway, is owned by a foreign government. Is that correct?
Frankly, we don't know. The last report I got was dated July of last year. At that time, they were owned 70% by the province of Ontario. So if a foreign government owns more, that has changed. And frankly, there's no information on it. It's much like there's no information on what the power costs are either. So I can't really answer your question.
So what do you know the ownership breakdown to be as of right now? Because I've asked this question, and the government liaison for Avista has been, at least with me, very forthcoming and very, very truthful on a lot of information. But it seems like there's a debate of what the ownership percentages actually are. What do you know right now? How does the ownership break down?
It's not right now. I'm not aware of it, and from the documents that I've seen, and I have collected about 480 documents, and so that the ownership's not among what I know.
So that brings up a question. Let's say that a majority share is owned by a foreign entity. Let me define that: an entity outside the United States of America. What are the implications of that?
I'd say that we should all fear that, because then someone that doesn't have our interest in mind could control our electricity. And we already know from experience in Ontario what that is doing. It devastates people.
So let's talk. What happened in Ontario?
There are many, many reports of suffering and misery because people cannot afford to pay their electric bill. Their bills cost half or more of a month's wage. Some people that are unemployed and have maybe a one part wage earner can't pay it at all. And so yesterday I testified in front of the commission at the hearing in Othello and told them of some of these. One of the really very sorry reports was from a family in Ontario. I don't know exactly the location, but they're near Toronto, within an hour's drive of Toronto. They have a father that, because they're without electricity and have been so for 6 months, they have four children. The father brings home water from work every day, and that's how they cook and bathe. They have to heat water, and then with shower bags, the children get to clean themselves. So they have to drink bottled water. They have to cook on a barbecue, and so the lady Carol says, you know, try explaining to your children why you can't get water from the tap. Explain why mommy is out in a blizzard trying to cook dinner on the barbecue. And Carol said that I usually wait until the kids are asleep and then I cry. And that was what she said on this YouTube video. I try to be positive, she said, but I can't.
So
that's just one report, and I have many of them here in front of me I could read from. And really that one really made me cry. And almost cry myself when I listened to her talk there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the process. So the UTC exists to approve these types of sales and changes in our utility companies. And also rate hikes. And so the UTC is kind of supposed to be a check in the system against rate hikes, against, you know, sales like this. Who do you think has the jurisdiction to stop a sale like this? And what do you think, you know, I guess going forward, people can expect from the UTC? I mean, what's your sense? You've been in a few of these hearings already.
Well, what I think is that if one of the three commissioners objects, then that means they cannot approve the sale. Or if one of the five states, Washington, Idaho, Oregon, Montana, or Alaska objects, I think that would show the sale is not approved. So that's how it would work. And I don't know that if that answers your question, probably not completely.
No, it does. And I've actually heard from some Idaho legislators that have shared a lot of concern over the potential impacts to not just their power rates, but potentially infrastructure in Idaho and Montana. What do you think that the listeners need to know about all of this? You know, there is an MP that allegedly made some remarks basically saying they would control our rates down here. You know, I've seen emails floating around about that. I mean, are these accurate? I mean, can you give the listeners a little bit of detail on the facts that you know about all this?
Okay, so we can start back before the year 2000. Their rates in Ontario were about like ours. They're about 3.5 cents per kilowatt hour. So just keep that 3.5 cents in mind. In 2009, Ontario Liberals passed what's called the Green Energy Act. And that mandated the end of all coal-fired power plants, which in Ontario were the best and the most efficient and secure plants on the continent of North America. But they had to end the use of those plants, so they had to pay for that. And then they mandated they must build renewable resources. And so the Ontario government and the energy ministry set out to purchase contracts with wind and solar providers. They were paying 400% more for wind energy than market-priced electricity, and they were paying 1,000% more for solar than market-priced electricity. And they signed contracts for 20 years. And they didn't place any limits on how much power they could produce. And they even said that they would get paid even when there's no power being produced. Of course, the wind doesn't blow all the time, and nor does the sun shine. But the renewable people insisted on that. And then at that point is when the power prices started to increase. At one time before the year 2000, you could find their rates on the internet. You can no longer find them. And so moving forward, then the exorbitant costs associated with the Green Energy Act now have forced them to add a second surcharge to the electricity called a global adjustment charge. The global adjustment triples the cost of a power bill. For instance, if your power is costs maybe 15 cents per kilowatt hour, and that's what it cost more than 5 or 6 years ago there in Ontario, then that amount would be tripled because of the global adjustment was so large. Today, or let's see, in 2015, the charge for electricity in Ontario was 29.9 cents. In 2016, it moved to 36 cents. And so all of this is caused by Ontario being terrified of carbon dioxide. And all I can say is it's a tragedy for all of the province of Ontario that they have to be subjected to this. And of course, the tragedy is spread across all of the nation of Canada as well. So today, I'll just stop there for a moment, and you might have some question you want to ask.
No, go ahead. I think that it's important also to note whether Canada is signing on to the Paris Accord or not as well, but please continue.
I might mention that. Actually, Canada is going along with Trump in that respect. There are 22 countries that followed Trump in July of last year to reject the Paris Agreement. Some of them not to a high percentage, some, you know, very definitely. But I want to mention just a few other experiences. Sure. That are going on there in Ontario. Other YouTubes that I've visited or viewed, for instance, Joanna in Timmins, Ontario, says she pays $800 a month for her house trailer. She's pregnant, expecting a second child. Another man says that he pays $880 a month to heat only 3 rooms, kitchen, bathroom, bedroom. The mayor, Lynn Watson from Echo Bay, Ontario, said that the Donnell's grocery had to close 2/3 of its store and all of its frozen and refrigerated foods, so there's no chillers. They can't afford the electricity. Other seniors can't afford the electricity. Dorothy and Ken Wynn in Moosonee, Ontario. And Miss Dobbin, the United Way executive director in nearby Bruce Gray, Ontario, said Wynn's and others' stories really fit the definition of energy poverty when they can't afford the most important necessity in their life. The smart meter program is out of control in Ontario. They spent $2 billion on it. What it was promised to do, it has not provided those benefits. They're completely unrealized. At this point, the Toronto Sun last year reported that over the 4-year period from 2013 to 2017, the disconnected homes grew 19% to 58,286. The number of electric accounts in arrears on the verge of disconnect grew 28% to 392,963. And the arrears debt grew even faster at 40% to nearly $135 million. Now, the promise that this could be coming to a Avista territory was made by, and you mentioned this, by a member of the provincial parliament on YouTube. Her name is Diane Verniel. She's from Kitchener, Ontario, and she said, and I quote her statements, she says, "To build Ontario's infrastructure, Ontario will sell off 60% of Hydro One in an IPO, initial public offering is what that is, but maintain control Hydro One's board, appoint its directors, maintain veto power, nominating authority to its subsidiaries, maintain regulatory control, and set rates." So will Ontario set Avista's rates? She says yes. Now, this is her promise that this is coming to Washington, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Alaska. And of course, in the stipulation agreement, these two utilities have with the state of Washington, they don't even promise that they will continue to be our supplier. Although I haven't read the agreement, but I understand from other people talking about it, that they actually have a way that they could escape the agreement and sell all of our facilities to someone else. And so we may be relying on another foreign country. And so, I got to get wound up about this.
I want to make sure that we're clear on something. I mean, okay. I'm looking at an article from April 2016 says Justin Trudeau signs Paris Climate Treaty at the UN, vows to harness renewable energy.
Yes, right.
Are they pursuing it, or have they backed off now kind of with Trump? I mean, what's the...
Well, yes, I have... I was gathering information about this when it was first announced. And so I have a slide that when I talk to people about it, that says this, you know, who actually paid for the Paris Green Climate Fund? And of course, no one but the United States has paid. They paid $1 billion. On June 1, when the U.S. exited the Paris Agreement, Russia and China were going along, but they're just going along for the ride. But also the other countries, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Ukraine, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria all followed along. In Canada, Trudeau said he switched from objection to U.S. appeasement, whatever that means. But also going along with Trump were the U.K. and Japan, Shinzo Abe in Japan, Turkey, Australia is on board, and all of the oil-rich Arab states and Germany. And even though Germany has had very unfavorable consequences from their renewable power, and so they're at this point where it's almost at the point where Germany is facing deindustrialization because of their reliance on renewable energy and the extremely high cost to pay subsidies to keep the renewable providers in business.
Well, that's kind of where I want to go with this is that, okay, so Trudeau signs the Paris Accord. These folks in Ontario obviously pushing a green agenda. Canada has been known for pushing a green agenda. Rate hikes have gotten so high, people are not able to pay it. But that's Canada. How are they able to translate that into rate hikes here in America when we have the UTC, which is supposed to be the check in the system to prevent those rate hikes?
Well, that's a great question, and I have no answer other than what the member of parliament, Diane Verniel, says. Yeah, of course, the UTC from Washington and the other states are supposed to be our check. Yesterday when I testified, I was very firm, and I had nothing good to say about Hydra One. And I had I was the only one to testify there in Othello yesterday, to my surprise. But I had 20 minutes of the commissioner's attention, and so you know I was free to say what I mentioned about the other experiences of the people in Ontario. And some of the comments I've mentioned here so far, but there's other things that are even more disconcerting about this that I was able to say. So if
we have time, talk about those things. Yeah, absolutely. What are those things that are disconcerting?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. The we finished with the global adjustment. The other part, some of the history of Hydro One and their record. Their outages, it's reported, are 30% longer and 24% more frequent. It charges ratepayers more money for systems in decline. And they're the least reliable in Canada, but that's their main business. It's distribution and transmission. It said that Hydro One, from these reports, lacks incentive to become productive. It builds cost overruns into its budgets and games the Ontario Energy Board to get more money, claiming its assets in poor condition. The Fraser Institute says about Hydro One, it wasted $2.25 billion on conservation efforts. And let's see, there was another item that I just found today here about Hydro One that was written by Parker Gallant, which I believe he is a resident of Canada. And he reported on, if I can see the date, in late 2017, oh, is it 2017, Ontario Auditor General's recommendations that essentially, he says, Hydro One thumbs their nose to the Auditor General because they only instituted 17% of the Auditor General's recommendations. I haven't read the whole article except for that headline. And then he also reports on other bad, and even worse news about Hydro One. And I don't have all the details, but I just want to mention that some of those headlines. Just, yeah, to go on and what I had written, the building of wind turbines in southwest Ontario, 40 miles east of Detroit, in fact, at the area called Chatham-Kent, they're installing wind foundations and they're destroying the local water supplies. The water is brown, black, a black plague, said farmer Mark St. Pierre, calling it a black toxic sludge, and it affects his wife's health. And it's only useful for, he says, bathing and toilets. And he reported this on YouTube as well. He says there's no way for it safe to drink. And there were about 20 or 30 families that were affected by this in this area. Of course, it was another new wind farm. And so perhaps the area of damage could be even wider. They just started with pile drivers, and that was what caused the damage. The other item that is, it moves the tragedy into the realm of, I don't know, I don't think I should, there's some things I would want to describe, maybe not as serious as that, but they're just not making good decisions. So if the last one was a tragedy, this is even worse. With the rates in 2016 at 36 cents, and the 36 cents I got from Statistics Canada, and I had to calculate knowing what the rate was in 2015. So that's as good as I can place the rates on. And very few people are aware that you can get cost indexes of all sorts of things in your economy from Statistics Canada. And of course, the United States government has the same sort of system. But anyway, I found that they had, once the rates got to 2000 or to 36 cents, excuse me, the energy ministry said, we're going to lower rates. And so they did this really stupid thing. They rebated 9 cents to everyone, lowered the rates to 27 cents. And they call this the Fair Hydro Plan. So, and this is going to go on, they say, for 10 years. So now the rebates are going to cost $18.4 billion that they're borrowing. The interest costs are going to be perhaps $30 billion if the rates don't go above more than 1%. So in 10 years, the ratepayers are going to have to pay 18.4 plus 30 or 48.4 billion dollars. And so the rates are going to suddenly just skyrocket, triple of what they did before. And the worst thing about this, the ministry promises that they're going to, people are going to pay 14 cents more. So it's going to go to at least 50 cents before you add, you know, extra costs, because you usually have inflation too that's going to be added. And so the 36 cents, had there been no rebate of from that point, the Hydro One Mirage would have done, it does nothing to address the lucrative contracts paid to the generators, which is at the root of this problem. And so, and I can continue. I don't know how we're, how
no,
we're
we
doing
got
on
about,
time.
We got about 2 minutes. Yeah, we got about 2 minutes left. So
okay.
I want to give you the opportunity to say the last thing, but also give the listeners a place they can go to find out more information.
Okay. Actually, the place where some of my material is published is at the NWPOA.org website. That's the Northwest Property Owners Alliance. They're based in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And so some of what I have talked about is there, but there are two other places at that my materials are published. But I think the folks could, let's see, maybe we could just give my email address and people could contact me. And I guess I wasn't prepared to go, because there's not just one place where you could go to get them.
Sure.
Let me find the item here.
And in just kind of the if you could, the wrap up comments on this and why people should be involved, and are there any more hearings before the UTC? We got about a minute left.
No, there are no more hearings. At this point, the public can only submit written comments. And really, the public only needs to submit comments saying that I object to the merger of Avista and Hydro One. And one very serious question about this is that if this happens, this area will lose control of all the hydroelectric dams. There are 13 dams between what Avista Utilities owns and what Alaska Light and Electric owns. And that is, that particular item is brought on because of the second part of the Green Energy Act. And that has to do with cap and trade, which is a long subject, can't get into that. But it actually worsens the Green Energy Act. If it was bad before, this is going to make it double or triple. And there, I tell you, Matt, there's only bad news. There's only bad news. And I guess I'll just have to close with that.
All right. David Balinius, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Appreciate all the research that you put into this. And you know, a couple of those questions that I've had, you know, I think that, you know, the listeners would really benefit from getting that information. So I hope that you can send me some of that and I can make sure to post it up on social media as well.
Oh, I can do that. Yes. Contact me by my email address too. It's balinius@gmail.com, spelled B-O-L-E-N-E-U-S.
All right. Thanks again, David. Take care and God bless.
Okay. Thanks, Matt, for having me on.
Well, let's talk about, very briefly at the end of the show, the fact that this is the most concerning part for me. The UTC being a check in the system, I understand that. But the most concerning part, if you have a foreign government owning any infrastructure in the United States, I've always been very cautious, very reticent on that issue. There should be huge checks in place on those types of things. And I think that's something to think about. And it's also just an opportunity for you to get involved and submit your comments to the UTC. This is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for listening to me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.